This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 163 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I figured a quick recap of the previous week's matchups podcast may be beneficial for you guys, so let's do that really fast. I'd say that overall, given I'm talking about fringe players, the picks were pretty decent last week. My biggest miss by far was Patrick Mahomes, though. I was a little hesitant to play him against a talented Chargers secondary, but he's looking super, super legit. I did mention sitting Sammy Watkins and playing Tyreek Hill, but I didn't envision Mahomes putting on the show that he put on. I also missed on Derrick Henry. I thought the Miami rush defense would look far worse than it did, and I figured that there was a chance for a positive script for Tennessee. But Deion Lewis out-everything Derrick Henry. As I talked about on my 15 Transactions podcast, I'm not really into Derrick Henry moving forward. I was also higher on Jamal Williams than I should have been, and my sleeper pick at wide receiver in Danny Amendola did not pan out. But there was a lot of good. Amari Cooper flopped, Golden Tate had a big game, the 49ers backfield was iffy, James White scored, Case Keenum, Tyrod Taylor, and Andy Dalton were all reasonable streamers, and most importantly, Jared freaking Cook went off. That was awesome to see. So overall, things were looking good in week one, and that just means we're about to regress big time here in week two. Before we get going, though, I wanted to let you guys know about NumberFire Premium. With award-winning daily fantasy tools, survivor pool picks, gambling predictions, and premium content from our top experts, NumberFire Premium has everything you need to dominate in 2018. Best of all, late-round podcast listeners get their first month of any level of premium access for just $9.99 with promo code CHAMPION. For more info, visit numberfire.com/premium. That's numberfire.com/premium. We'll kick things off with a very clear bounce-back candidate in Week 2 and a quarterback that I'm into, and that's Ben Roethlisberger. Big Ben will be at home this week in a game with the highest over-under on the week against a Chiefs secondary that just allowed well over 400 yards to Phillip Rivers. And if you hashtag watched the tape last week, then you probably saw that Rivers could have had an even bigger day if not for some costly errors by his wideouts. Big Ben being at home is a big deal, though. In games where he's thrown 20 or more passes over the last 5 years, when he's been on the road under the split, he's averaged 14.4 fantasy points per game. At home, that number jumps to over 22. The matchup here is amazing for Roethlisberger. I think Jimmy Garoppolo will bounce back this week too and be a top 10 quarterback. He's facing Detroit, and the Lions allow the third highest success rate in week one, which measures the percentage of positive expected points plays made by a player. And that's determined by NumberFire's net expected points metric. But the Lions allowed a 61% success rate to rookie Sam Darnold. Now the Lions will be on the road playing in San Francisco with the 49ers as touchdown favorites. Jimmy G should be good to go this week. On the other side of things, a player I'm mildly worried about in week two is Russell Wilson. Now, I don't think he's someone that you should absolutely be benching, but I do worry a bit about Seattle's offensive line against the Bears' front. The Seahawks are also going to be on the road as an underdog with a game total that's not very high at just 43.5 points. So to me, Wilson is more of a higher-end QB2 rather than a firm QB1. I may not play a streamer over him, but I'd be playing someone like Jimmy Garoppolo over Russell Wilson. You shouldn't be playing Andy Dalton this week, though. The Ravens defense limited the Bills to just 6.6 yards per drive in week one, and while the Bengals are certainly not as bad offensively as Buffalo is, the Ravens defense is really good. They're without cornerback Jimmy Smith, but both Brandon Carr and Marlon Humphrey were strong in week one, and the Ravens have really good safety play as well. Baltimore's also a road favorite in this game. That's never a good thing. With a lot of good quarterback options this week, I'm not sure Andy Dalton deserves a starting nod. So you may be wondering which type of player you should be playing over Andy Dalton. And I think one of them is Case Keenum, who's my deep quarterback play of the week. Keenum let it rip in week one, throwing to a 9.4 average depth of target when his A-dot last year was almost 2 full yards shorter. He'll be at home this week, which is always a plus, and he's facing an Oakland Raiders squad that surrendered a pretty bad 47% success rate to Jared Goff in week one. And that's with Jared Goff really not having his best outing. Oakland's secondary isn't a scary one, and Case Keenum should be able to take advantage of the matchup. At running back, a player I seem to be higher on than the consensus this week is Chris Thompson. I understand the thought that Adrian Peterson is the more logical play over Thompson this week, given the fact that Washington is a pretty decent favorite, they're at home, and that means that they might run the ball similar to what we saw in week one. But even in a very strong script for them against the Cardinals, Chris Thompson played about 42% of the team's snaps and he saw 7 targets. His rushing share was just 11%, but that's to be expected given the role that he plays on that team. And not only that, but the Bengals utilized Joe Mixon a good bit through the air against Indianapolis last week. He ended up seeing a quarter of the Bengals' targets. So I think you could actually make the argument that Chris Thompson is the better PPR play over Adrian Peterson this week because he was totally fine in an ultra-positive game script last week, and there's always the chance that this one doesn't go as planned. Another back that I like this week is Alfred Morris. I wasn't into him in week one because of a poor matchup and the potential for poor game flow, and that's a big reason he didn't perform. But there was still good that came from that game. He saw four goal line rushes. He was the goal line back. He fumbled at the goal line, but he was the goal line back. And he played about 52% of the team's snaps while seeing 48% of the team's rushing attempts. In a game against the Lions' rush defense that was just gashed by the Jets, Alfred Morris is not a bad flex option. I really don't know how you're confidently starting LeSean McCoy this week. As I noted earlier, the Bills' offense averaged fewer than 7 yards per drive against the Ravens, and McCoy was absolutely useless from a fantasy football perspective as a result. We can't put too much into his numbers because the game got so out of hand, but that's part of the issue. We shouldn't feel good about players in the Bills' offense right now, especially against an at least average defense or an average to good one given their injuries like the Chargers have. I wouldn't consider McCoy as anything more than a desperate flex at this point. Maybe that comes back and bites me in the you-know-what because of the amount of volume that he might see, but I think it's logical to just fade the Bills' offense until we actually see something. I'd also be benching Peyton Barber this week. If you noticed in week one, the Falcons against Philadelphia had a really high pass-to-run ratio both in general and when the game was within 6 points. And it's because running against Philadelphia is a very difficult thing to do. And we really don't know if Peyton Barber is going to have any sort of receiving role this season for the Bucs. He didn't see a single target in week one despite playing over 72% of the team's snaps. That's not exactly a good sign. Barber should see volume on the ground as he did in week one, where he handled about 56% of Tampa Bay's rushing attempts. But I'd be nervous about his potential given what he does is exactly what Philadelphia's defense can just gobble up. My deep play of the week at running back is my dude Nyheim Hines. Hines actually played 45% of Indianapolis's snaps in week one, and he saw 9 targets, which converts to about a 17% target share in that Colts offense. Now, 4 of those targets came on their final drive, but even 5 looks without that hurry-up time is a good sign. And maybe there's another negative game script in Washington this week. It might be hard to play Hines with confidence only because he may end up being a little bit game flow dependent, but if you're going bold with a deep play, you're sort of looking at how a game is going to unfold. You're predicting how that game is going to play out. And there's a chance this unfolds unfavorably for the Colts, which would force the pass-catching Hines onto the field. And the other thing with this is that Andrew Luck really didn't push the ball down the field in week one. Only 5 of his 53 passes went 15 or more yards through the air against the Bengals, which was one of the lowest marks in the league in week one. So if he's not slinging it down the field, that benefits a player like Nyheim Hines who's coming out of the backfield. I talked about him last week, but at wide receiver, I'm into Golden Tate once again here in week two. Against San Francisco last week, Adam Thielen ended up seeing 9 slot targets, and this is courtesy of Pro Football Focus, and he turned 5 of them into 68 yards. He faced K'Wan Williams in the slot, who allowed the 3rd most slot yards in week one. And last year, Williams ranked 5th worst in coverage snaps per reception in the slot, and 13th worst in yards allowed per snap. The Lions continued their pass-happy ways in week one even when the game was close, with a 2.4 pass-to-rush ratio in a neutral script. The volume will be there for the Lions pass catchers, and given this matchup, things should benefit Golden Tate most. And speaking of slot matchups, you've got to like Tyler Lockett's this week. When Doug Baldwin left Sunday's game against Denver, it was Tyler Lockett who stepped in and played in the slot, and that's precisely the position that Randall Cobb played and crushed the Bears at last week. Cobb finished with over 27% of Green Bay's targets, and he caught 9 of 10 balls for 142 yards and a score. With so few pass catching options on the Seahawks roster, Lockett should see strong usage in week two in that same matchup against the Bears. Devin Funchess is another wideout that I'm into this week. I admittedly did not love Funchess entering the season because his splits with and without Greg Olsen last year weren't all that attractive. When Olsen and Kelvin Benjamin played significant snaps with Devin Funchess in 2017, he averaged fewer than 10 PPR points per game. When they didn't, that number rose to over 18. The Falcons' defense is banged up and they're playing in a dome. Christian McCaffrey could absolutely go berserk in this matchup, but Devin Funchess is not in a bad spot either given the lack of alternative options in that Panthers offense. As for wideouts I'm lower on, look no further than Amari Cooper. FantasyPros.com rankers have him listed as a high-end wide receiver 3 this week, but similar to LeSean McCoy, I'm not sure how you can feel good about tossing him into your lineup. He played 93% of Oakland snaps this past week, so that's good, but in a tough cornerback matchup, Cooper saw 3 targets, 1 catch, and 9 yards. He now has fewer than 10 receiving yards in 6 of his last 13 games. You just can't risk that, especially not in another not-so-easy matchup. So just keep him on your bench. Chris Hogan is in an obvious bad matchup this week against Jacksonville, and I don't really think that you can play him either. I would probably say otherwise if he had come through with a big Week 1 performance, but after playing by far the most snaps for New England in Week 1, Hogan had just 1 catch for 11 yards on 5 targets. I think better days will be there for Chris Hogan, but this just isn't a week where you should risk it. He'll always have a ceiling, though, given the offense that he's playing in. Now, my deeper play this week at wide receiver is Mike Wallace. He didn't have a great Week 1 outing, but he served as Philadelphia's number 2 wide receiver, playing 92% of their snaps. And his matchup this week is delicious. Tampa Bay's secondary is completely beatable, and they're now without Vernon Hargraves and potentially Brent Grimes. If Grimes is out, then they'll be playing 2 rookies in Carlton Davis and MJ Stewart and an inexperienced Ryan Smith at corner this week. Clearly, Nelson Agholor is a superior play for Philly, but this bodes very well for a wide receiver playing almost all of the team's snaps. So like I said last week, when talking about tight ends and defenses, I'm just going to talk about either fringe players that I like or streamers that I like, because it's sort of useless to talk about a tight end to bench. So with that, let's talk about Jack Doyle. Doyle is the Colts tight end that I want the most in fantasy football. Even though Eric Ebron got the Week 1 touchdown, Doyle played more than double the amount of snaps as Ebron played, he ran 28 more routes, and he had double the amount of targets. And this week he'll get a Washington defense that could have given up a decent day against Ricky Seals-Jones last week, if not for a completely inept Arizona offense. And Washington's defense is one that didn't perform well against the position in 2017. Doyle, to me, is a top 10 option. And speaking of Ricky Seals-Jones, he's in a great position to score fantasy points this week. He did disappoint in Week 1, but he had good peripheral numbers, seeing 6 targets, which was good for a 17.7% target share, while playing 93% of Arizona's snaps. He'll face the Rams this week in a matchup that saw Jared Cook go absolutely nuts in Week 1. While those Rams corners will lock up the outside, the middle of the field is weaker for a tight end to do some work. RSJ is absolutely a decent streamer this week. And Jared Cook could actually come through with another big performance this week as well. He saw the highest target share among all tight ends in Week 1 at 30%, and the Raiders really don't have obvious alternatives at their pass-catching positions. The Broncos have struggled against tight ends over the last few years, and a lot of that has to do with their cornerback play, which is still good even without Aqib Talib. We even saw that this past week when the Seahawks scored 18 PPR points against them. That should allow Jared Cook to see volume once again and potentially come through with another strong performance. The 2 streaming defenses this week are Washington and the New York Jets. With Washington, you've got a team that's at home, they're a 5.5-point favorite, and they're playing Indianapolis that allowed a pair of sacks, 9 quarterback hits, and an interception to the Bengals last week. Washington also looked good in Week 1 on the road, albeit it was against a bad Arizona offense. And then the Jets are interesting because they're also at home as 3-point favorites, and they're playing Miami. The Dolphins were fine in Week 1, but Ryan Tannehill still threw a pair of picks. He's always capable of having a bad game. And the Jets were really impressive in their Week 1 performance in Detroit. I actually mentioned this in a podcast over the offseason, but the Jets' secondary is probably a little bit underrated, and they could beat up on Miami a bit in this week's matchup. That's going to be it for today's matchup show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. If you have a question for the weekly mailbag episode, make sure you're sending those questions to that Twitter account. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you tomorrow.